You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 427.
Hello and welcome back once again to the Outdoor Station and part two of the three-part series recorded at the recent Adventure Travel Show at Olympia in January 2017. I hope you enjoyed part one with its hidden gem and that part two won't disappoint either with a smorgasbord of content from a variety of sources. And don't forget, please, links to everything we discuss and you hear on The Outdoor Station can be found over on the website, theoutdoorstation.co.uk. And if you do drop by, why not give us some feedback on the show as well while you're there? It'll be greatly appreciated. As it is the beginning of February as I record this, we also have a winner to our January competition to announce. So keep listening to see who that is. First of all, let's start with the last great wilderness all outdoor people I'm sure would aspire to visit and experience at least once in their lives. Although we may have seen it on TV and assumed it was out of our financial reach, the truth is that it is much more affordable than one might think. Of course, I'm talking about the true backcountry of Canada. Harlan Schwartz of Red Lake Outfitters explains why we should visit Woodland Caribou Provincial Park.
Woodland Caribou Provincial Park, it's one of the most remote and northern provincial parks in all of Ontario. At the end of the road, what we offer is 1.2 million acres of wilderness without any development. It's in the heart of the pure boreal forest of northwestern Ontario. And at that size of 1.2 million acres, only about 500 people a year get the opportunity to access it. What it all equates to is the opportunity to roam freely, travel at your own pace without the worry of designated campsites or a quota-based system, and not have a chance really of running into anybody else. It's really your trip your way. And because we're a water-based park, it's all connected by water. It's water trails, canoeing. As everything is connected, you could have a 5 or 6 or 10 day journey. You can decide on your start and exit strategy points and not even know how you're going to get there. But because everything's connected, you can play choose your own adventure and you can change your route midway. It's really all about flexibility. From a bushcrafting standpoint, with whether it's Paul Curley or Ray Mears or other bushcraft personalities that have come up and used our area, our landscape being the Prairie Boreal, being a fire-driven jack pine and black spruce area, lends itself so well to practicing bushcraft skills, whether it's shelter making or fire making, friction fires, or just observing the natural state. You're in an area of true wilderness that hasn't been spoiled yet. Very intimate locations on lakes, smaller lakes, very intimate campsites, where when you pull up to a campsite location, it's not impacted. You won't see compacted soil. You're going to see fresh deadfall or lush green leprechaun-filled moss. It's truly an area that is as wild as you can get.
So is this area in Canada unique as regards a national park?
So it's a provincial park. So it's within the Ontario park system. What's unique about it is it's not quota-based, meaning they don't monitor how many people are coming in and out, and they don't have a designated campsite system. So what's really unique about it is it gives the flexibility to the traveler where you can wake up in the morning and have no idea where you're going to get to that day. So it's your trip, your way, ultimate flexibility. You can stop anywhere. You can make a camp anywhere. You can light a fire anywhere. You can make it your trip, your way. Obviously, an incredible investment in time to come over from the UK into Canada to visit one of our areas like this. What you're rewarded with for the finances that you put out and for the time that you put out is the ultimate flexibility to be kind of your own king for a week or two.
Yeah, yeah.
And just travel at your own pace and do anything that you want to do. And it's very rare.
So your pictures here, a beautiful range of pictures. Tell me about some of the wildlife that one could experience. Say you came over for a 3 or a 5 day trip, or you added a 3 or a 5 day trip to your time while you're over in Canada. What could you experience in that time realistically?
Sure. So we work with our clients to understand exactly what their needs are and then provide route options based on what they want to experience.
So you customize each trip?
We customize each trip to each individual group of clients. for those that want to see the wildlife, whether it's woodland caribou, which we actually have the largest remaining population of in all of northwestern Ontario, majestic animals. If you want to see woodland caribou or moose or great gray owls or wolves, we can provide you with access to the areas that have the highest densities of these animals, depending on the season. So in the spring, we can put you in one area to see caribou. But if it's the fall time and you want to see wolves in their natural setting, we're going to put together a route package that's going to show you a journey that's going to hedge your bet in good favor to see those wolves in their natural environment, howl out to them, have them howl back to you. It's a really cool experience.
In this day and age, obviously everybody thinks about safety. So if somebody was considering taking over a young family to the area, so what parachutes do they have? What sort of safety element do they have to consider?
We operate, obviously, safety first. So we brief all of our clients and go through, obviously, a number of checklists. We offer every one of our clients Iridium satellite phones, brand new each year. We have top-of-the-line equipment. You'll have a satellite phone. Not that it's something you should rely on, but it's a tool that you can use. We also have spot locators that we give out. So if they want to let people back home know where they are, they can track their progress every day. In terms of our safety plans when things go wrong, or if people are late for a pickup, or if something happens, breaking a leg, for example, whatever. We have three aircraft at our disposal, flow planes, two De Havilland Beavers, one Cessna. And within minutes of getting a call that there's a problem, we can be in the air, taxiing down that lake, and getting to them, and then providing whatever first aid is necessary. So in terms of having satellite phones, having the infrastructure in terms of the aircraft and trained staff, I think that we can operate as safe as you could possibly get, given that it's a very remote backcountry setting.
Well, part of the appeal is the fact that it is remote and backcountry.
Absolutely.
But it's a question that people have to think about these days. So, final question, because I'm sure people, as they're listening to us, are starting to think this is going to be really, really expensive as a way to enjoy such a unique place. Can you just give me an idea of prices, what it would be for 2017 for one or two people to come out for a few days?
Sure. So for 2017, prices for packages start at $1,295 and they move up.
US dollars.
US dollars, $1,295 up to about $3,200 US dollars. That includes everything once you get into Red Lake, which is where we're based out of. Float planes, meals, accommodations. It's a whole package. We want to see people come. Given the remote nature of the trip and the access to the resource that you're going to get, we feel it's very aggressively priced. We want to see people come and experience Ontario and this incredible wilderness park.
So for people considering actually coming from the UK and actually wanting to include the price of the flight as well, you've teamed up with some people to organise some good offers, I see.
We have. And, you know, starting with Windows of the on the Wild, who's our partner here in the UK, prices start from £1,140, all in, including international flights, all the way up to about £3,000. Depending on the type of experience you're looking for. So something for everyone, but our $1,140 or £1,140 package gets you seeing wolves, howling to wolves, gets you into this incredible backcountry, and starts you off with an incredible adventure.
Amongst all the stands here, I've just found sandwiched between exotic trips and destinations for big adventures, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office had a little stand there that was offering assistance and advice and giving people some more background information about the work they do. Now, obviously, as it's a government office, they weren't available for comment, but I did have a very good conversation with them, and they explained one or two stories which are relevant to people perhaps considering going to areas which are slightly more dangerous, you would say, at this moment in time. As it happened, the team there were from the terrorism department, which made things even more interesting. And a few stories that they did tell me would make the proverbial toes curl. However, the main thing that they wanted to get out and get across at this particular show was to remind people that just because somebody advertises an adventure in a destination which is exciting, it doesn't necessarily mean that it is, they would advise, safe with the information they have to hand. An example, a poster they had on the wall was an incident that happened last year in Kabul, where a group of tourists were on a tour. Their tour, their daily itinerary was posted on the website, and the dozen or so people came under fire from the Taliban. Now, obviously, not a nice situation to be in. And however, the English people amongst them, although they, if you like, called for help or tried to sort themselves out, weren't going to get anywhere under the circumstances. However, amongst them was an American. And I don't know how, but the message got from the American to American forces that just happened to be in the area with a small troop, and they managed to extricate all of them safely. But obviously a very sticky situation, and as the person was telling me, something that people don't necessarily think about. They think about if the company is offering the experience and the experience's itinerary is publicly known, then possibly it could make you a target without realising it. And that, of course, can be anywhere in Asia, Africa, or obviously over in the Far East. So for people thinking about it, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office basically was saying it's very hard because they're trying to be supportive and give people as much information, British nationals abroad, no matter where they go, and obviously help them extract them from situations which may have happened to them either as accidents or something more sinister. But it's very difficult when the general perception that they are given in the national press is a fairly negative one. Obviously, all they do is offer advice. They cannot tell you that you can or can't do something. But basically, the bottom line was contact them, have a look on the website. It is continually being updated. In fact, one of the team were updating the website as I was watching regarding certain areas where the news had come in, particularly Gambia at the moment. For obvious reasons. Well, we say obvious reasons that we know about in the press, but obviously these guys know a little bit more, and it was very, very interesting. They were actually isolating specific areas as being areas in danger at the moment. So if you're thinking of going further afield and you're thinking of booking on one of these exotic holidays, adventures, and it's going well out of your comfort zone, then do consider having a look on the Commonwealth Office. They are there to help, as they say. For the last 3 months, we have been running a competition to win over £150 worth of great outdoor kit each month. All the entries have been compiled, so let's see who has won the January 2017 competition.
Hello.
Hello, this is Bob calling from the Outdoor Station. Who am I speaking with, please?
Speaking to Rob.
Yeah, hi there. Rob, it's a very quick one. You entered the Outdoor Station competition in January and need to answer the question. In Sleeping Beauty, the princess was saved from the curse of endless sleep by what? A frog, a donkey, or a prince?
A prince.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You have won a superb range of lightweight sleeping equipment.
Thank you. Fantastic. Brilliant. Very well. Handy, actually, because we're just about to start a campaign of wild camping every month of the year. So, me and my wife.
Oh, excellent.
Fantastic.
So, is your wife going to get the luxury camping equipment or sleeping equipment or yourself?
I think it's myself, because I've been kicking her out while camping. And so, I've got a very old thermometer. So, this is brilliant. Fantastic.
Excellent. Well, if you can just hold the line, I shall take some details.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much. And can I just say, I really do enjoy your podcast. They're absolutely fantastic.
Now, I mentioned hidden gems at the beginning of the show, and here comes another. The Globetrotters Club, a friendly group of like-minded travellers who seek to explore the world and share their experiences in a social network. They were tucked away in the communal area, chatting to whoever would stop for a moment when passing by for a chat. There was no commercial angle, no hard sell, just sharing their passion for travel and letting people know about the group in general, what they do and why. Paul Roberts from the group tells us more.
We're a club for independent-minded travellers. We've been going since 1945. It's a social club. We have meetings in London and a group in Chester. The meetings consist of... We have two or more speakers. So if it's two speakers, it's two 40-minute talks. And there's free tea and coffee in the interval, and a chance for people to ask questions and socialise. And we also go to a local pub after the meetings, so then people go out for a meal afterwards and stuff like that.
Okay, so we hear about the meal and the pub and the coffee.
Right.
Now let's talk about the Globetrotters Club.
Okay,
so first of all, is it a commercial enterprise? Let's get that straight.
Okay. No, we're not a commercial enterprise. We're a company limited by guarantee, so that means the members, if anyone sues the club, the members are only liable for £1. So you can't get into any trouble there, because some clubs have got into trouble.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. So, and membership is the extortionate fee of £10 a year?
£10. It's £30 for 3 years. It's £12 for 1 year.
Okay.
So it's from £10.
From £10 a year. All right, you're doing the good sales pitch here. So give me an example of your typical member then. Tell me about them.
Our members are from 30 up, people who like to travel independently, not on tours so much. Maybe they go with one of the more adventurous tour groups sometimes, but it's people who sort of organise stuff themselves and
independent travellers
and get off and go on their own.
And so are we talking on a shoestring, or are we talking people that are very affluent?
On a shoestring, really.
Yeah.
I think not affluent, maybe, but they used to say it was a club for people with anemic wallets back in the day.
Okay. Well, I think the audience will understand that joke, certainly. So, okay. So you're a volunteer organisation with very minimal fees that seeks to support and promote general travel. So is it just the destination that's important, or the actual journey, or the meeting people? What do you sort of support? What do you promote?
The journey and meeting people, I think, yeah. That sort of thing.
And then the information that's shared at these meetings, then, is it practical, as in this is how to get from A to B and this is how much it costs, or are we talking about the experience to Andalusia was absolutely fantastic because?
Both, really. I mean, people ask questions and people will put their hand up and say, oh, I know about that, and then they'll get together and have a little chat. So it could be the experience, or how do you know what time the buses go from this place? Sometimes people do, sometimes they don't, but maybe they know where you can find out, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, you've got a list here of previous speakers, some of which are extremely well known, and obviously there's a lot of information floating about. Regular meetings in London and in Chester. Obviously, I'll put the links to the website on the podcast as well, so people can look you up. Is there anything else that you feel my listeners should know?
Yeah, we produce a quarterly magazine called Globe, which is 24 pages, colour. It's downloadable from the website as a PDF that people can either read it on an iPad or print it out and read it. And it's full of stories by members, tips and advice, that sort of thing.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure it'll appeal to all my members with anemic wallets.
Thank you very much.
The home of UK-based audio and video podcasts for outdoors people everywhere. If you have any feedback, questions or suggestions, why not drop us a line, either on Facebook or directly to our email address, info@theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
At the Adventure Travel Show, one face that you will have heard me speak to earlier on last year is Dave Cornthwaite from Yestable. We spoke about his forthcoming event just before it happened in October, regarding getting people together that wants to feel more positive about life and doing things. And I'm fortunate to corner him now between talks to ask him actually how it all went.
It went brilliantly, thankfully. Our first ever Yestable was in October 2015, and we had 200 people. First festival myself and my brand new team had ever organised. So a year on from that, in October 2016, we doubled in size, but still managed to keep this a really nice kind of intimate atmosphere across the field. We had a number of speaking tents, and there were always four speakers going on at any given time. And although our philosophy is, I guess, innately positive, you know, think positive over negative, whatever the situation, and it's mainly based around just having a community of people who want to make more of life, you know, and that means a different thing to everybody. So all of our speakers come together and they've all got great stories and a brilliant way of translating them. It was a really magical weekend, actually.
I have seen some of the social media that came from it afterwards. I sort of kept an eye on it for a while and saw various people. And it all looked very, very casual, just a basic stage, really, and whoever was presenting were telling their story to a packed tent.
Yeah, it's really, really relaxed. You know, we don't pump a lot of money into it. We don't earn a great deal from it either. In fact, we only just broke even, which isn't bad, I hear, for a second festival.
Absolutely.
The stage is, you know, it's a few blocks of staging, but we turn it into a living room. So there's a sofa and, you know, a lampshade and a bookshelf, and it's a really homely atmosphere. And I think what we've managed to do really well is take 400 people in the case of last year and make everyone feel very at home, where they're happy enough to be vulnerable and talk about the things that they're actually being challenged by in life, as well as the dreams that they have, if you like. And that's really important. And as a result, it means, you know, you open up about anything you're challenging. You find out that everybody else is usually finding the same challenges in life. So people slowly start nitpicking their way through those, and then I guess they're a little bit more empowered to go off and do a big adventure or quit that job that is sucking their soul, or set up a bakery, you know, just do something new.
I think a lot of the times in situations like that, it's about what's stopping you doing something, not what you want to do, almost. And it's getting rid of the negatives to release the positive.
Absolutely, and this is what we focus on. We focus on the doing. You know, we're a community of doers, and regardless of how you're feeling or what your normal antics are when you come along to the first gathering, whether it's a night of adventure or a day of converting our bus into a co-working space or the Yestable, then you realise suddenly you're just amongst like-minded people who like do stuff. And when you're surrounded by people who don't use those excuses that are so easy to come up with in life, it makes you use them less too.
Very good philosophy. Now, I understand you're running again next year and you're increasing the size slightly, but you're obviously setting yourself a limit now.
Yeah, I really want to cap it at 500. I think with that we can still have a really kind of intimate weekend, but at the same time it's big enough to make it worthwhile for everybody. So we only just launched tickets at 1 minute past midnight this morning.
Oh, really?
So we launched 125 early bird tickets at £125 each, and I think we've sold over 100 already, which is incredible. We're not quite Glastonbury yet, but as soon as they go, then we've got another 375 tickets at £160. But we've also got day tickets and family tickets as well. We've got a place called Dream Camp in the corner of the festival, which is all for parents and kids, and we get a lot of overlap between the two as well, so it's really nice.
Did you do any research on where people came from as a matter of interest? Did you find they're all local to the event, or had they travelled some distance?
Most people travelled. There were a number of locals there just because they heard about the festival through Brinsbury campus where we host. But the Yes Tribe now has over 3,500 members. Mostly in the UK, probably 80% in the UK, and 80% of them are in London, but the rest are dotted around. So we had people travel from Canada and Australia and New Zealand this time around, which is amazing.
What, specifically for the show?
Specifically for Yestable, and then a lot of people from London around the UK.
When I spoke to you last time, you said there was somebody going to be setting up on a trip or doing something interesting, and you were going to give them a big send-off, but you didn't tell me any more than that, I think, at the time. So what actually took place?
So we have this, I guess now it's a tradition, that from every Yestable, someone leaves on some form of non-motorised transport to start a big trip. The first time round, it was Tommy Scargill. He's still en route, cycling from the UK all the way to China. And then Helen Proudfoot left in October 2016, and she's en route to New Zealand on her bike. So it's amazing. We had 400 people forming an avenue for Helen as she rode through. And what an incredible day, you know, in someone's life, just to begin a trip with that much support. And
you can't turn it down after that, can you?
Can't turn it down. And I think it's a lovely trampoline. It's a lovely platform to go off and have a brilliant trip. And everyone else who saw her leave thought, oh, I could do that. You know, what's my thing?
Yeah, that's got to be very empowering. And yourself, you've been doing these 1,000-mile trips now. You set yourself a number of challenges to do that, but just briefly, we were talking earlier on, you were saying you don't actually plan more than a month ahead. I find that incredible.
Yeah, I think I've got this project called Expedition 1000, and the idea is to do 25 different non-motorized trips of 1,000 miles or more. And I've ticked off 12 of them now. And yeah, I guess it's something that once you do anything a lot of times, you get more comfortable with it, you get better at it. And also, I couldn't imagine planning for a trip a year in advance. You know, by the time I'm a year's past, maybe I don't want to do it. So I leave a couple of gaps in my calendar each year for a journey, and then as the time approaches, just a couple of weeks in advance, I think, okay, do I want to travel on water or land? And then I just make it happen. I write a list, I get my transport, I buy my ticket, and I get going.
I know you get a fair amount of publicity from doing this, but I think I read somewhere, which I admire most of all, is the fact you do this as cheaply as possible. You're not doing it from a luxury support crew type of bay.
Oh my goodness, no. I mean, having a support crew is a pain in the ass at the best of times, and I really try and keep these things simple. I usually haven't ridden my mode of transport before I start the trip, so I just work it out in the first couple of weeks. Fitness grows, and then you can cover more ground. And each trip, on average, is less than £1,000 in cost. So, I mean, I've travelled over 20,000 miles under my own steam in the last 10 years, but I've spent 598 of those days on the road doing those trips. So, you know, that's 2 years out of 10. So it's a relatively small fraction. So anyone can get off and do this stuff. It doesn't have to be pricey. You don't need all the gear. It's more a mentality thing. And I like saying yes. Nothing really scares me. And I learned that. I wasn't always that way. I just learned it because I went out and did stuff.
Dave Cornthwaite, the ultimate yes man. So do drop by theoutdoorstation.co.uk for direct links to cyclists Tommy Scargill and Helen Proudfoot to see how they're getting on. Maybe we'll be able to catch them at some stage and get them on the show one day soon. All the other links are there too, and any other relevant information I can think of. My thanks to everyone who took part in the show. In part three, we have a full interview with the fascinating and well-known and much-respected Cicerone Press author Kev Reynolds. So do drop by next week to hear more then. Until that time comes, take care in this wet and windy February, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.